Richard Neal is my congressman from the Massachusetts 1st District, a Democrat in office since 1989, and poised, I may say, if the House flips, to be the head of the Ways and Means Committee. Hey, Richie, how does it look? Does it look like there may be a flip in the House?
Well, I think it looks very good. As you note, the president last week indicated that he thought that the House would now move to the Democrats based on a dinner speech he made in Ohio. And I think that when you look at the polling data everywhere, it certainly is encouraging. In the generic, we would need a lead of about 8 to 9 points to secure the House. And I think that at the moment, based on the quality of the individual candidates that we've had a chance to meet and a chance, by the way, to be supportive of, that those candidates are as good as I can remember.
You know, Richie, you are one of the smartest people I know. I say that not to flatter you, but to ask, to implore you to tell me how come the Trump base doesn't move at all, no matter how great the scandals get.
Well, I think that one of the troubling aspects of their intransigence is that they tend to, I think, forgive all. And whether it's been the downward pressure on wages that America has felt during the course of the last 12 years, or whether I think it is changes in economic security that they've anticipated, or I think it jobs that have moved offshore, I think all of those issues have certainly enamored the president to many of the people that have been described as his most stalwart supporters. On the other side of it, I think that we can get some of them back in the November election. And I use this example, Alan, which I know you'll be very knowledgeable about when you talk about the changes in the American electorate. Mike Dukakis won West Virginia. That in and of itself is a reminder of where we used to compete. And then Hillary Clinton, 2 years ago, she lost by 42 points in West Virginia. And I think that we are not going to change the status of coal on that basis. Obviously, it's natural gas that's putting coal on the sideline, which I think is desirable for all of us to put coal in a different capacity in America. But it's shrinking in and of itself. And I think that when you look at the states that we used to be able to compete in as well, where Bill Clinton won Tennessee and Arkansas twice, and then won Florida, and even in the last round or 6 years ago, when you consider that Barack Obama, in his first presidential run, he won North Carolina and Indiana. So I think that we shouldn't just suggest that we can't win in these states any longer. But the Trump base, I think part of it is the feeling that they've been sidelined. And I think that the feeling is that for whatever reason, as he's emerged, whether it's political correctness or whether it's his assault on the institutions of American democracy and the fact that he's so unpredictable, whatever it is, I hope that calmer heads will prevail.
Richie Neal, the question to many people who are seniors is Social Security. I know that you have fought tirelessly not to let them touch it. And certainly, in addition to all the other reasons that I love the fact that you're my congressman and I'm going to vote for you, it's your assiduous work to keep Social Security as it is. Is it in danger under Trump?
I think that it's always in danger if you have somebody who either doesn't understand it or who wants to privatize it. You recall that in the effort that President Bush made right after his reelection, I was tasked by the Democratic leadership to travel on behalf of defending Social Security and feel very strongly about the fact that the best thing about Social Security is you can't outlive it. You can outlive an annuity, and I think that's one of the problems with annuitization. You certainly can outlive personal savings, but you can't outlive Social Security. And that's based upon the fact that it is an earned benefit, that along the way people took perhaps lower salaries so that they might be able to provide for their retirement years. And there are different parts of Social Security, but the genius of the Roosevelt Initiative is that it permeated the argument that retirement was supposed to rest on a three-legged stool: some personal savings, a pension, and the guarantee of bedrock Social Security. When you consider every day in America that 55 million Americans get up and go to work who are not in a qualified retirement plan, and when you consider that the Social Security average benefit is about $16,000 a year, then clearly we all have a vested interest in making sure that security is best enhanced by making sure Social Security is there for generations to come. Another important caveat, I think, as it relates to Social Security, is that if you postpone the benefit from 62 until 70, you almost double your benefit. And the optimal benefit for my generation, for example, the baby boomers, was 66. And when you look at Social Security and how it's calculated and you understand that the average benefit is $16,000 a year, you can plan around it. And bluntly, I would say to the cynics, remember, Social Security is in good stead until 2033. And after that, it still provides 80 cents on the dollar. So there's plenty of room here to do any of the repair work on Social Security that is necessary. But this idea that it's doomed to failure or that it's a Ponzi scheme is nonsense.
Well, I don't get the Republican argument here. Maybe you could help me, although it is antithetical to what you've been doing on this, which is, I understand this business of it's going to run out. It's a phony issue as far as I'm concerned. You can take some of that defense money and put it where it belongs. But what about the robbing of the Social Security fund by the Congress all of these years? You know, if they had left it alone, we'd never have a problem.
Well, I think that that's a legitimate criticism, and it became part of the use of general budgetary priorities, but always understanding that the money would be returned to the Social Security Trust Fund to make sure that it was there for retirement savings. And I also think that Social Security is important to the fact that it provides survivor benefits. That's still an important consideration. You know that if you had, for example, a mother and father that prematurely died, then children would be able to receive until they got through high school what are known as survivor benefits. So it's multifaceted, but I don't think there's any imminent danger. And to the economic issue that you raised about Social Security, remember the following, that when you look at how Social Security was pieced together, the idea was that we would all pull a wagon in our youth because we would have to sit in the wagon in our aged years. So it works on a generational basis, and I think we can all say with great confidence that even though Social Security is based upon buying Treasury notes that Republicans argue are not as competitive as turning the trust fund over to Wall Street, I think had we turned that trust fund over to Wall Street, as George Bush suggested, after the second election, it would have been a nightmare for the American people.
So, look, they had mothers. They have people they know. I mean, how do they look in the mirror?
Well, I always think that it's interesting that despite all the talk that you will hear from them about the Social Security Trust Fund, including about 15 years ago, I remember a former Republican chairman of the Ways and Means Committee comparing our retirement system with Social Security to Chile. I was just flummoxed. And today, if you use that argument, nobody would suggest that we not only should compare it, but the Chilean system is under great assault economically. And our system continues to move along with minor repairs from time to time. And this idea that you can guarantee what the stock market's going to look like if you were to privatize it simply doesn't square.
Finally, you have heard the president has made his deal with Mexico. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's too early to speculate. I had some idea as to how they were going to proceed, and that was they would try to use the creation or suggestion of a bilateral agreement with Mexico to perhaps get Canada to buy in more quickly. We actually run a trade surplus with Canada, despite what the president says. And I think the idea that you're going to proceed with a hemispheric agreement and say it's only based on a bilateral with Mexico means that you have a long way to go in this.
We've been talking to my Congressman Richard Neal, Richie Neal, as he is known to all of us, of the Massachusetts 1st District. Richie, I just wanted to say one thing. And that is, we have, of course, repeatedly offered your primary election opponent an invitation to come on the Congressional Corner, and she has declined. So for whatever it's worth, we try to play it fair here. Great to talk to you, Richie.
Nice to be with you, Alan. Thank you.